Our forests, farms, and urban areas are all dependent on this precious natural resource. As living beings, our very essence is water. Our bodies are dependent on the daily influx of water to keep the system running smoothly. The Earth itself is mostly water, with its surface dominated by vast oceans. Yet less than 1% of the water on Earth is fresh water that is available for use by humans and animals. So while water is abundant, it is also very dear, and its quality and quantity must be protected from degradation. Over the course of history, water has been of central importance to survival and quality of life. Humans have worshipped water and used it in religious ceremonies and rituals. We bathe in it, play in it, and use it to remove our wastes. We use it for transportation, industry, and sport. Water is truly the stuff of life, beautiful, intriguing, and essential. And yet water can also threaten us. As we've seen recently, floods can devastate entire communities, while a lack of rain can cause droughts that ruin crops and livelihoods. Scarce water resources can cause wars and strife. Contaminated water can cause illness and even death. In our region, we are blessed and sometimes cursed with abundant water supplies. Our extensive water resources in the Northeast set us apart from other areas of the world and the United States where water scarcity causes suffering. With the rise of globalization, our local resource of fresh water is becoming a global resource, and we must conserve and protect our water supplies for our present and for our future use. Today's show examines water protection efforts in Greene and Columbia counties. We will visit three watershed stewardship programs in the two counties. A watershed is an area of land that drains into a body of water. So today, we will visit the Catskill Creek and the Schoharie Creek watersheds in Greene County and the Greater Stockport watershed in Columbia County. All of these streams eventually flow into the Hudson River. By being good stewards of our local watersheds, we help to protect the water that flows into the Hudson River estuary and eventually into the Atlantic Ocean. We'll start out with a story from my home turf, the Catskill Creek watershed. On a beautiful morning in late May, I stood on the banks of the Catskill Creek, soaking up the warm springtime sun. The Catskill is a major tributary of the Catskill Creek and a well-known stream made world famous by the Catskill Falls, which have been visited by tourists for well over 100 years. The lovely spot where I stood on this glorious day is several miles downstream from the falls. It is a property owned by the Hartmans, a family who had applied for a Trees for Tribs planting on their stream bank. Trees for Tribs is an initiative of the New York State Department of Environmental Conservation's Hudson River Estuary Program. Tribs, or tributaries, are streams that flow into larger bodies of water, such as rivers, and trees play a major role in keeping them healthy. The Trees for Tribs program provides native trees and shrubs to streamside landowners and coordinates the planting of the trees on their stream banks. I asked Mr. Steve Hartman what had motivated him to apply for the Trees for Tribs program.
I was losing this property, you know, gradually, piece by piece. You know, every winter, when spring would come, I would notice there was a little bit less land here that was under my domain. And so I decided it would be nice to try to do something about that. And I found out about the Trees for Tribs program through a forester.
The Hartman family had been awarded a planting of several hundred trees, and I had come to lend a hand with the effort. Joining me in this arboreal adventure were teachers and students from the Cairo-Durham School District. More than 20 high school students and sixth graders joined forces with adult volunteers to plant trees in holes that had been dug by Trees for Tribs staff members. The students worked in teams to plant the saplings, place weed maps and tree tubes around them, and stake them for support. Cairo-Durham teacher Donna Trunzo explains her motivation for involving her students in projects such as the Trees for Tribs planting.
You know, along with what we do in the classroom, it's really nice to get the kids outside, hands-on science, hands-on nature, kind of increase their awareness of the importance of the environment and that we are stewards of the environment. And I want them to grow up and be kids that care. You know, we want to go green, right, kiddo? Yeah.
The students at the Catterskill plantings have had ample opportunity to get out in nature and experience hands-on science. A grant from the Hudson River Estuary Program has provided Cornell Cooperative Extension and the Catskill Creek Watershed Awareness Project with funds to provide watershed education for youth and adults. Thanks to this funding, these students have explored the Hudson River Estuary and its tributary streams. The Hudson River Estuary Program has the ambitious goals of ensuring clean water, protecting and restoring fisheries, wildlife, and habitats, assuring river access for all, adapting to climate change, conserving our landscape, and educating the public about water resource issues. The Estuary Program provides all of these services, both directly and by providing funding to partner organizations. Protecting streams through planting trees helps the Estuary Program to meet several of its core goals. Fran Dunwell, Hudson River Estuary Coordinator, volunteered at the Catterskill planting and explained the public benefits of the Trees for Tribs program.
Streams are really the lifeblood of the Hudson Valley and the Hudson River Estuary, and what we really need to do is protect the stream banks so they don't erode. We need to protect the stream habitats that support a lot of wildlife, and we need to keep the streams cool. And the streams, of course, also provide drinking water for people. So it really serves a lot of public benefits to protect a stream. And the number one thing you can do to protect a stream is protect its stream bank. A lot of people tend to mow right up to the edge and take down shrubs and trees, but those shrubs and trees are really vital for the health of the stream, for clean water, for habitats. And so we're working with community organizations to identify stream banks that don't have trees and shrubs on the stream bank, and to plant trees. So there's really nothing more fundamental that a family or a kid or a school group can do to help the environment than plant a tree. It really contributes to the sustainability of our whole Hudson Valley watershed and our ecosystem.
Scott Cuppett, Watershed Protection Specialist for the Hudson River Estuary Program, explains some of the negative impacts that development can have on our streams and how trees can mitigate some of those impacts.
You can measure how much impervious area, whether it's rooftops or roads or parking lots or driveways, sidewalks, how much of a watershed area can be impervious before you start to see signs of trouble in your stream. And the research that I've seen, and some of the more recent research, suggests less than 10% of your watershed area. If it becomes 10% or more, you start to see noticeable impacts to water quality and habitat and the wildlife that lives in the stream, which isn't all that much. So in the grand scheme of things, there's all sorts of things we can do on the landscape to lessen our impact to water, but one of the most important areas is that area right next to the stream called the riparian area, the streamside area. So our program focuses on maintaining the vegetation in those areas and restoring vegetation in those areas as one of the keystones of watershed protection. Ideally, you want to have trees along streams. Trees are important for keeping your bank stable because the root system kind of locks in the soil. It also, you know, and grass has a very shallow root system. So if you're mowing up to the stream, there's nothing in the root structure next to the stream that can really hold the bank together as well as a tree does. So trees and shrubs and native vegetation are really important. And how far away from the stream you avoid disturbing has implications on the benefits that area will provide to the stream. So if you're only trying to protect, you know, streams from erosion, maybe a single line of trees, large trees is adequate, but we'd suggest even going further than that and getting multiple benefits out of areas along streams so that we provide habitat and we protect floodplains. We'll benefit water quality, it will benefit wildlife, it will benefit erosion control on your property, which no one wants to lose land. So there's all sorts of benefits from protecting that important area.
As Scott mentioned, erosion control is a concern of most streamside landowners, like Steve Hartman. I asked Steve if he would recommend Trees for Tribs to other landowners.
And this is one of those things where it's just it's a win-win. I don't know why somebody wouldn't do it if they were in the situation where they needed the help. And I don't know, they're not going to come to your property if you don't need it. The Trees for Tribs organization will come and they'll scope it out and they'll see if it's right for you. And if it is, you'd be crazy not to have them, because you're planting the right trees for the right area, the right distances, the right depths, to not only, protect the environment, but to protect your investment, your land that is being washed away.
Caro Durham High School teacher Sue Boyle also appreciates the multiple benefits of the Trees for Tribs program. The program helps to synthesize information that the students have learned about watershed protection during the school year.
I think throughout the year they learn all, things related to water quality, photosynthesis, global warming, all these different aspects of our environment. And they're really quite knowledgeable. And then, it's in the classroom. We can only do so much in the classroom. So it's just nice to get out there and really see, okay, the riverbank is eroding and let's do something about it. Let's put some trees in and we have all the benefits. And now they actually know, okay, the root system will stop the soil from eroding. The leaves will carry out photosynthesis, produce oxygen, reduce carbon dioxide, reduce global warming. So just so many things that they really are knowledgeable about.
Student Caitlin Peckrell describes how participating in the Trees for Tribs program has enhanced her educational experience.
I don't think in any other classroom that I know of, kids just get to go out and do this as part of their class. I mean, I think it's really exciting. I'd rather be doing this than sitting around in the classroom writing notes on how trees prevent erosion. I mean, it's easier to see it.
So whether it's environmental, educational, or personal, the Trees for Trib program provides benefits for all of us. Fran Dunwell sums up the positive aspects of planting trees.
It really is amazing. The act of planting one tree can do so much for your soul, for your yard, for your stream, and for the Hudson Valley.
For more information about the Trees for Tribs program, contact Riparian Buffer Coordinator Beth Russler at 845-256-2253. You're listening to Living Lightly on the Land on WGXC 90.7 FM. I'm your host, Lizlo Judas, and we just heard a story about a tree planting on the shores of the Catterskill Creek, which is a major tributary of the Catskill Creek. The Catskill Creek watershed is 416 square miles in size and encompasses parts of 13 towns in Greene, Albany, Schoharie, and Ulster counties. I coordinate the Catskill Creek Watershed Awareness Project, which has a mission to foster appreciation and understanding of the Catskill Creek watershed through outreach to regional stakeholders to promote protection, conservation, and stewardship of our natural environment for the benefit of all. The Catskill Creek watershed is separated from our neighboring watershed, the Schoharie, by the northeastern escarpment of the Catskill Mountains. We'll turn next to a story about the Batavia Kill Stream Celebration, a festival held on a tributary of the Schoharie Creek on the Greene County mountaintop. Some people might wonder what a performance by a taiko drum ensemble has to do with protecting water quality. But at the Batavia Kill Stream Celebration, the ensemble was appreciated by an enthusiastic crowd enjoying a day of recreation on the shores of the waterway which flows through their community. On August 6, 2011, the 5th annual Batavia Kill Stream Celebration offered a variety of attractions for folks to enjoy. From musical performances, to chefs preparing delicacies from locally grown products, to stream walks and boomerang demonstrations. The Batavia Kill is a Catskill stream that flows through communities in the town of Windham before joining the Schoharie Creek near Prattsville. Greene County Soil and Water Conservation District, the agency that coordinates the Schoharie Watershed Program, hosts the annual celebration of the Batavia Kill in an effort to raise awareness and appreciation of water resources. I asked Michelle Yost, Watershed Assistance Program Coordinator at Greene County Soil and Water, to describe the Schoharie Watershed.
The headwaters of the Schoharie are up in the town of Hunter, and then it flows ultimately to the Mohawk, but it is dammed at the Schoharie Reservoir in the town of Gilboa. The Schoharie Watershed encompasses 3 counties and 11 local municipalities, over 315 square miles. That is above the dam at Gilboa. So we're just talking the upper New York City portion of the Schoharie Watershed, which is what I work in. The mountainous landforms, as you know, we have the second highest peak in the Catskills is Hunter Mountain, which is 4,040 feet. And we have a lot of beautiful mountains, the low valley streams. I guess a good way to describe the Schoharie Watershed is it's absolutely beautiful, but temperamental. And temperamental in the sense when we get heavy rainstorms, the streams rise, we have devastating floods. The streams rise quickly, but equally drop. It doesn't take much for the streams to go down. So we have what's called in our stream management plans, a flashy stream system in the watershed.
I asked Michelle how the Batavia Kill Stream Celebration promotes the greater understanding of the Schoharie Watershed.
Well, one of the unique aspects of the Batavia Kill Stream Celebration is the amount of exhibitors and agencies that we have involved that are there to impart information to the public. And we have agencies that work at the local level, the regional level, the state level, New York State Department of Environmental Conservation, the New York City Department of Environmental Protection. The amount of agencies, nonprofit, government agencies that come and represent their programs is just fascinating. I love a quote one of the exhibitors shared a couple of years ago. It's like a who's who in Greene County at the Batavia Kill Stream Celebration. So it's amazing. I think we had close to 20 exhibitors this past year. So it's just a great avenue for people to come, meet agencies, learn about the programs that they offer, take material home, and interact, too. A lot of the exhibits are interactive in nature, where people are actually out walking the streams, learning about stream functions, the types of plants that grow along the streams, what's natural, what's invasive. There's something for everyone, we like to say.
There certainly was something for everyone at the Batavia Kill Stream Celebration. In addition to agency exhibitors, the event boasted a robust cadre of vendors selling handcrafted products, an environmental film screening, Green Peas TV, live animals, and hands-on kids activities. Walt Keller, retired DEC fisheries biologist, shared his catch of the day with festival attendees.
So we got one maritime and we have a white sucker there. This is still a juvenile white sucker. It's about 4 inches long, 5. We have 2 kinds of dace. We have black-nosed dace. They're up in the water column. And then we have long-nosed dace, which are always at the bottom in the stream. And the long-nosed dace are in fast water. The black-nosed dace are generally in quieter water. That's how they can stay high in the water column. We got one little brown trout. And this is a wild fish. He was spawned in the stream.
The Batavia Kill Stream Celebration isn't just fun and games. The event, which is held at the Country Suite Bed and Breakfast in Ashland, showcases a stream restoration project that was completed by Greene County Soil and Water Conservation District in 2006 as part of a contract with New York City Department of Environmental Protection. The event featured tours of the section of the stream that was restored using natural channel design. We'll hear Dave Burns from New York City Department of Environmental Protection describe their stream management program. And Joel DuBois, from Greene County Soil and Water, explaining the specifics of the stream restoration at the site.
One of the reasons we do the stream celebration on the Batavia Kill in here is because we did a rather large stream restoration project in this section of stream. Joel's going to give some specifics on that project, and I'm just going to give you a little bit of overview of our program in general. Our program started, the stream management program started about 10, 12 years ago, and the city contracted with local agency basically to kind of build local support for this kind of work, and also obvious perception issues with the city and working in the local municipalities. So in the Schoharie Basin, we contracted specifically with the Greene County Soil and Water District. Through the Soil and Water District, we have pretty much a program, soup to nuts, education outreach, stream restoration, stormwater projects, you name it. They pretty much cover most of the programming components. And these particular projects, the Batavia Kill started as a pilot study early on in the 90s to see if stream restoration could reduce turbidity. One of the largest goals for these projects is to reduce turbidity in the Catskill drinking water system, which is comprised of the Schoharie and the Esopus. The biggest problem is clay. These valleys are underlined by large deposits of lacustrine clay from glacial lakes that were here 10,000 years ago. So as the streams erode, they eventually erode into these clay layers. And as you probably know, if you've been up here during a rainstorm, the streams tend to run like Yoo-hoo. They look very, very muddy. That turbidity is so fine, it's hard to get that out of the water when it gets delivered to the city. So we're trying to treat the turbidity at the source, keep the stream away from the turbidity, and also try to get some other habitat improvements along the way. For a lot of these sites like this one, and some of the other ones we've done, were pretty degraded before we did these projects. The stream has become over-widened. Some of them have gone subsurface, so there was no flow in the stream. So there are a lot of habitat benefits come along with projects. And I think at this point we've done about 8 miles of stream restoration of these full-channel restoration projects, plus a lot of basic riparian buffer projects, and then a few 5 or 6 stormwater remediation demonstration projects throughout the basin. So you want to talk about the specifically project?
Yeah, sure. This is a project that we did in 2006, and sort of the what's behind this is at the beginning of the program or our initiatives in each basin that we have contracts with DEP for, we go through and do a walkover of the stream to identify key features like erosional areas, areas that are more pristine and serve as sort of a reference for what we're trying to achieve, different impacts on the channel, you know, any maybe garbage dumps that might be near the channel, things like that, just any relevant features to stream health and function. And this was one of the sites that showed up in our data as one of the hot spots for erosion. And the sort of process that was happening here is you can see that there's a bridge just downstream, and County Route 17 runs across the floodplain. Well, at large flow events, that road fill and the bridge opening sort of impound water. As the bridge sort of reaches its capacity, the water that's flowing into this reach can't all get under the bridge, so it starts to back up and pond up here until finally it can spill over Route 17, and water has been over Route 17 at least twice since we built this project. So though that backwater or that ponding effect that the bridge and road fill has here interrupts sediment transport. So as gravel and cobble that's being eroded from the upper watershed sort of rumbles down in the flood, all of a sudden as it gets into this ponded area, the stream no longer has the power to move that through the system, and it deposits in sort of unpredictable ways in the channel. The result of that is as it deposits on point bars, it sort of the outside banks tend to erode because the velocity of the water on the outside of the bend is quite a bit faster than it is on the inside of the bend. So the stream tends to deposit larger particles on the inside where the water's slow. And because the particles that make up the bank generally are finer because they're unwashed, unrinsed, they're more like topsoil deposits, it's easier for the stream to pick up those small particles and mobilize those and leave the larger particles behind on the point bars. And you can see a point bar down below where, you know, that's a natural process and it will happen in streams, but it can happen either at a normal natural rate or it can accelerate and, as it was here, really start to deposit faster than the vegetation can recolonize and stabilize those deposits. And like I say, it makes the outside banks erode more, pick up those fine particles, and some of those are clay particles, like Dave mentioned, that are really difficult to get out of suspension once they've been entrained by the water. Well, what we've done is we've tried to establish these stable conditions. So you can see now where all of these outside bends used to be cut open, raw, or exposed soil. Now they're vegetated, in most cases, right down to the water line. In a few cases, if you walk through this whole site, you'll see there are some cut banks, but they aren't retreating. You know, they used to run back. Every time there was a flood, they'd be 10 feet further back. Now, even when they are cut, the stream stabilization structures prevent that mass migration, you know, that sort of rapid bank retreat. So the yield of sediment that's coming from this site is almost arrested.
The Batavia Kill Stream Celebration melds science and engineering, outdoor recreation, and the arts to create a memorable day on the stream. The day is enjoyed by all, especially event planner Michelle Yost. Michelle happily shared a quote from a festival participant who really relished the event.
There was one quote in particular that was sent after this year's event. It was one of the chefs with the Chef Consortium, which is a group of local chefs in the Hudson Valley that joined us this year for the first time to help promote local products and through cooking demonstrations. And Nikki Kagan sent this quote to me. I would love to share. "This event was one of the most fulfilling events we have had. I was thrilled that my family could take part. The setting was magnificent, and the groups involved were a dream come true. Our entire family and team had a great time. I believe this is what education should be like every day. The Batavia Kill Stream Celebration was a day filled with fun, creative learning set in a beautiful environment of the surroundings."
To learn more about the Schoharie Watershed, contact Greene County Soil and Water Conservation District's Watershed Assistance Program at 518-589-6871 or visit www.gcswcd.com or www.catskillstreams.org. You're listening to Living Lightly on the Land on WGXC 90.7 FM. I'm your host, Liz Lo Judas, and we just heard a story about the Batavia Kill Stream Celebration. This festival was held just a few weeks before Tropical Storm Irene devastated the mountaintop communities. Recently, I interviewed Joel DuBois, who we just heard talking about stream restoration techniques. Joel works for Greene County Soil and Water Conservation District in the Schoharie Watershed, but he lives in Catskill and is a member of the Catskill Creek Watershed Advisory Committee. Joel shared his perspective on the storm and the effects it had on the Batavia Kill. Joel, please describe what happened with the Catskill streams in general and the Batavia Kill in particular during the tropical storms that we had.
Well, the rainfall amounts in the Upper Batavia Kill watershed were in excess of 13 inches overnight. So a great deal of runoff came off of the landscape, and there are a series of flood control structures in the Batavia Kill watershed. Those are designed for 100-year storm events, and all three of the flood control structures in this event filled up to their capacity and flowed through their emergency spillways. So there was a period when they were attenuating that flood water, but once they were full and into their spillways, basically all the water that was coming into them was going out just as fast, and so that attenuation was lost. And the lower Batavia Kill below those flood control structures had to deal with the full extent of the runoff of that flood event, which in most cases those flood control structures will attenuate those peaks. The peak flows will be reduced in the areas below, which include Hensonville and Windham, Ashland, and even Prattsville, because the Batavia Kill flows into the Schoharie. And during the flood, around 9 o'clock in the morning or so, the Batavia Kill actually jumped from already at 6,000 CFS, which is far beyond full bank flow. It jumped from 6,000 CFS 8 feet in elevation in 45 minutes. So that would sort of indicate that was the time of the morning when those flood control structures went over their emergency spillways and that sort of rush of flash flood came down. So all in all, the Batavia Kill had the most discharge, the highest return interval flood event of the Schoharie watershed, and then also fed that water into the lower Schoharie from the intersection of Route 23 and 23A down into the Schoharie Reservoir, which that would have run right through Prattsville. Quite a bit of damage along the Batavia Kill and a lot of channel damage, channel oversizing now because it had to deal with those excessive discharge numbers.
And can you describe how the stream restoration areas, like the site that you gave the tour at the Batavia Kill Stream Celebration, functioned during the storms and how they fared during the storms?
The stream restoration projects that we've designed on the Batavia Kill are designed to handle or targeted a 1.5-year flood event, where the water is just full to the top of the banks and basically the incipient point of flooding. This flood event obviously went far beyond that, and so there are some damages to the projects. Like I say, these are 1.5-year target designs. They aren't designed to handle every flood event without any damage, but what they are intended to do is handle these flood events and not let the recovery potential of the stream channels be degraded through the flood event. So we use a combination of grade control structures, lateral erosion control structures, to make sure that even though the channel gets scoured, that the overall connection with the floodplain is not hindered, and that elevation is maintained to prevent downcutting into the clay deposits that are a water quality concern. But beyond being a water quality concern, that downcutting is also a channel stability concern. So we're quite happy with the performance of the projects in that those characteristics of floodplain dynamics have been preserved through this flood event, even though, like I say, the flood elevations for this event were several feet above the flood elevations that the channels were designed for. In most cases, the projects avoided any capital damages to roadways, infrastructure along the project lengths, which is, you know, a great outcome for this storm, because in areas outside of our restoration reaches, there's widespread damage to infrastructure, bridges and culverts, and even road lengths that have been wiped out by the channel. So in some instances, the Batavia Kill in particular, where we visited at the celebration, that site looks almost as if no flood went through it. There's essentially zero damage to that site. And, you know, that site is one of the ideal candidates for the type of work we do because it's so well connected to its floodplain. Other more confined reaches that we've done did sustain damage, but like I say, we're able to protect the infrastructure and minimize the damage and maximize the recovery potential of those channels post-flood.
Going forward with the way the streams are now, do you have any recommendations for folks that might live near the stream or highway departments that are dealing with trying to protect the infrastructure from flooding post Irene?
The channels are so badly damaged. In many areas, the floodways have been eroded to sizes far in excess of what they were before the flood. And sort of the flip side of that is that a lot of that material that was eroded out of those oversized areas has been deposited somewhere. And in a lot of cases, channels have been filled with gravel. Channels have realigned because of those gravel deposits. So in some areas, some excavation work is necessary to reopen the channels. In other areas, the channel's already oversized, and again, roadways have been blown out. So, the best recommendation is to not overreact. These channels are dynamic, and they do have excellent recovery potential. They're quite resilient. So not to overreact is the first step. Like I say, some areas will need to be excavated to reestablish flow, but to resist the urge to dredge long reaches of river. The dredging in that manner often isn't effective because it can destabilize the channel upstream, and more sediment ends up coming down and refilling in the areas where the gravel was removed. In a lot of cases, those gravel deposits have established an equilibrium, and removing them actually destabilizes and puts it out of that equilibrium. So obviously in some areas excavation and armoring is necessary, but not to overdo it and do more damage in the post-flood response than in some cases what happened during the flood.
Thanks for listening to Living Lightly on the Land on WGXC 90.7 FM. I'm your host, Lislo Judas, from Cornell Cooperative Extension's Agroforestry Resource Center. We'll turn now to the east shore of the Hudson River to learn about a watershed protection program that is underway in the Greater Stockport watershed. I'm here with Fran Martino and Vinnie DeBoise of the Greater Stockport Creek Watershed Alliance. Could each of you please explain your interest in being part of this watershed protection initiative?
Well, sure, Liz. I'd be happy to. I've been heading up the Greater Stockport Creek Watershed Alliance for a few years now as the education and outreach coordinator for the group. We are a grassroots organization. We're funded through the New York State Department of Environmental Conservation's Hudson River Estuary Program, and we've also received past funding from the New England Interstate Water Pollution Control Commission. And my interest in watershed awareness and watershed protection kind of goes back to my first trout that I caught in the Kinderhook Creek back when I was about 9 years old.
And Vinnie, how about you?
Well, I represent Trout Unlimited, and I also represent Columbia County Sportsmen's Federation, and our interest is in the water for the quality, for the fish to survive, insects to survive, and wildlife. On the Columbia County Sportsmen's Federation part of it is all the ducks and deer and beavers and the wildlife that exists on the watershed system. With Trout Unlimited, we look for clean, cold water for the trout to survive, and they need the insects to eat. And if we don't have good, clean, cold water, we won't have any fish. So that's where I'm interested in trying to help whatever I can for the Kinderhook. So.
Can one of you guys describe the area of land that encompasses the Greater Stockport Creek watershed and how it includes the Kinderhook Creek?
Yes, the watershed is actually a pretty large one. It drains about 517 square miles of the Mid-Hudson Valley through Columbia and Rensselaer counties. And also over in Massachusetts, it goes through Berkshire County in the western part of Massachusetts. The watershed travels through 26 different municipalities, and the Stockport Creek is formed by the confluence of the Kinderhook and the Claverick Creeks. The Stockport watershed is 1,077 miles of fresh water, and it is the second largest tributary watershed to the Hudson River estuary. The Rondout is the largest, and I believe Catskill is number three.
So what are the major issues impacting water quality in this watershed that you're aware of?
Well, we've been taking readings on many of our stream locations that indicate we have some problems with some of the oxygen levels being extremely low, while nitrate and phosphorus levels are on the high side. Now, with the aftermath of Irene, we're suffering from some severe sediment and erosion problems, even more so than we had been. A couple of the other challenges that we're facing in the Stockport Creek watershed include a lot of pressure of development. A lot of our communities are growing at a rapid pace, and in some cases, they lack the infrastructure to be able to handle the population increases. We also have a lack of green infrastructure throughout the watershed area. In some communities, we have funding issues so that communities are not able to afford to be able to participate in certain training sessions or provide some of the best management practices, such as pervious surface options or safe road de-icing treatments or upgrades to wastewater treatment facilities. So there's a lot of challenges out there for not only our watershed, but many of those here in the Hudson Valley. Most recently, we've also learned of the level of Enterococcus that has been found at some of the sampling sites that we've explored during the month of July. We found that 53% of the sites that were tested were found to be in the unacceptable level that is according to the EPA standards. And the presence of Enterococcus bacteria is an indication of fecal pollution and the possible presence of pathogens. Now, we did go back out in August to do some retesting and found at that point, and again, this is before Hurricane Irene came through, but the subsequent tests that were done reflected that 65% of the sites sampled were also at the unacceptable level. So, you know, we have a lot of issues to be addressed, and we are doing our best to work on these things as time and funding permit.
We're concerned about the pollution into the water, and, you know, is it safe for fish? Is it safe for people to swim in? And we have to protect that water somehow, and we have to make people aware of their water that they live around and what they use. And this is one of the reasons why this watershed was formed, so we can get the word out to the people that live in it.
How is the group raising awareness of issues in the watershed?
Well, we are contacting the different villages and municipalities, going to meetings, participating in the meetings, and we're looking to extend awareness to the different municipalities by doing different events to bring people to the awareness of their watersheds.
We partnered up with Trout Unlimited a couple months ago to do a stream cleanup along the Kinderhook Creek. We visited all the fishing access sites along the creek to pick up trash and litter and try to clean up for the upcoming season. Another project that we've worked on in the watershed is participating in the Trees for Tributaries project, which is a DEC-sponsored project where they provide trees or shrubs that are native to the area. They come out and dig the hole for you with a giant auger. They provide all of the weed matting and the tubing to protect it from deer browse. So it's a really great project. We've planted trees along the creek over at Hawthorne Valley Farms, and we've done a planting up in Chatham at Little Seed Farms, which is along the Stony Kill. And the project is offered at absolutely no charge to the participant, and it's a wonderful project. All you have to do is find some volunteers to plunk the trees in the ground, and everything else is pretty much done for you. So it's a great way to help restore the stream banks or prevent erosion issues. So it's a great opportunity. Trees for Tribs, it's available through the DEC. Another thing that we're working on is a sign campaign, and we're trying to prompt some interest and curiosity that will bring people to visit our website, which is www.stockportwatershed.org, where visitors can learn about what their place is in this watershed and how we're connected to upstream and downstream communities and the Hudson River. So we have some outdoor signs that we're placing in various locations throughout the watershed, out in front of town or village hall buildings that say, find your place in the watershed, and what's your watershed address? Again, a way of trying to raise some interest and get some curiosity going. One of our other things that we have put together is a group of volunteers who are called the Stream Spotters, and they're out on a weekly basis collecting data on the quality of the water. Our website has a map of their locations, and their findings are updated on a weekly basis. Some people are taking just air or water temperatures, while others are taking a little bit more in-depth study. They're looking at oxygen levels, pH levels, nitrates, phosphates, coliforms, that type of thing. So we'll have a nice database pulled together to be able to do some comparisons throughout the whole watershed.
Sounds like you guys are really busy and doing a lot of great things, and people can visit your website. Can you give that website address again? It was www.stockportwatershed.org, right?
That's it.
And is there any other methods that people can use to contact you if they're interested in becoming more involved?
Well, they can always give me a call at area code 518-828-1330 or email me at fran@stockportwatershed.org. And people might want to take a look at our website to go to the link that has a map of the watershed. So you can click onto that Google Earth map and zoom in to view the watershed by street address or by terrain or by satellite imagery. And the website also has a nice collection of photographs of various locations that have been taken in different seasons. And we've also provided some of the history that's associated with the communities that are within the watershed that go back to the use of the creek as a power source for many of the mills and factories that once were out there along the stream banks. So again, we hope you come visit our watershed, either virtually or...
It's important that people really look at their watershed and get to know where they live and what's going on around them, and their, you know, for the environmental part of it. And it's good to get involved. It's good to be concerned. There's all kinds of things... You know, there's different farms, there are people live along the streams, and this is where you live. And you have to take care of your surroundings. And this is a good place to start and get familiar with what's going on. So.
Yeah, we've all recently seen the power of water with the recent events that New York and other northeastern locations have gone through. And I think if you haven't had respect for the power of water, you certainly do now. And it's really important to be a part of the community that wants to protect it and take care of it and look after it and be a steward for this great area that we live in. Because we now know that what can happen when that bridge is no longer there to take you to the other side, or the the stream bank that used to go east is now going west. So it's real important for people to stay connected to the earth. So I want to thank you for allowing us to share information with you today, Liz. I appreciate your having us on.
Well, thanks to you very much for taking the time to speak with me today.
I'm Liz Lo-Judas, and you're listening to Living Lightly on the Land on WGXC. Thanks to Fran and Vinny for providing that interview on the Greater Stockport Watershed Alliance. Although this show has a focus on watershed protection, we don't want to forget the sheer enjoyment and appreciation of beautiful places on our streams. This last interview is with Catskill native Joe Kames, who brought me to a stunningly lovely spot on the Catskill Creek, Austin's Glen. I'm here with Joe Kames and some members of the Catskill Creek Watershed Advisory Committee. And Joe has brought us to Austin's Glen on the Catskill Creek. And we're sitting in this absolutely gorgeous landscape of exposed rock with the creek flowing over a waterfall area. And it's just a spectacular time to be here on nearly the first day of summer. So, Joe, thank you so much for bringing us here today.
Oh, you're welcome.
And I wanted to ask you how you found out about this spot.
Well, when I was in ninth grade, my family moved from Liberty Street in Catskill up to Jefferson. And my friend Pete Reitmeyer also lived in Jefferson, and he told me about this wonderful forest where he fished and he trapped and hunted. And he took me down to the glen. There weren't too many houses around in the approaches then, and I fell in love with it. I've been coming back here ever since, and that's been a little over 50 years now.
And has this spot changed very much in the 50 years that you've been visiting?
Well, some of the old stone building structures have deteriorated a little bit, but overall, it's pretty much the same.
And can you just talk a little bit about what you were saying earlier about the railroad that used to go through?
To the best of my knowledge, it was the Catskill and Canajoharie Railroad ran along the embankment that runs parallel to the creek. That's what we took when we got down here. And I've seen pictures of it in some books about the railroad. And they show the glen pretty much as it is today, but stripped of a lot of its vegetation for the railroad.
And Joe, can you just share with us why you think this is a special place that should remain undisturbed?
It's natural. It's the way things were hundreds of years ago, and aside from the railroad embankment, it's still the same. It's a place to get in touch with nature, to feel the changing of the seasons. It's just a place that restores your soul.
I agree with that 100%. So thanks again for taking us on this wonderful field trip today.
You're welcome.
That's all for today's show. Thanks for listening, and a special thanks to the New York State Department of Environmental Conservation's Hudson River Estuary Program and the New England Interstate Water Pollution Control Commission for funding in support of this show. Next month's show is on invasive species and will air on November 7th at 2 p.m. We'll close today with a taiko drum performance from the Batavia Kill Stream Celebration. The leader of the taiko drum ensemble is Kenji Bon, who is the head farmer at the Catskill Mountain Foundation's Sugar Maples Center for Creative Arts in Maplecrest.
This is Laura Kuhn of the John Cage Trust. You are listening to WGXC 90.7 FM ACRA, creative and community radio in Greene and Columbia counties.
The Mental Health Association of Columbia and Greene County's 5th Annual Pumpkin Walk will be held at our new location, Columbia Greene Community College, on Saturday, October the 15th. Family entertainment, including Tots the Clown, will begin at 4, followed by the Pumpkin Walk at 6. Journey down the path lined with twinkling jack-o'-lanterns, a great family activity. For more information on this event, call Christina at 518-828-4619, extension 302.
WGXC founding underwriting support is provided by Hawthorne Valley Association, Harlemville, New York, a diverse educational nonprofit set on a 400-acre working farm in central Columbia County. Farm, farm store, early childhood through grade 12 Waldorf school, and more. For more information, www.hawthornevalleyassociation.org.
Good afternoon. Welcome to Wellness Watch. You're listening to Wellness Watch at WGXC 90.7 FM from ACRA, Hudson, and Catskill. Wellness Watch is part of our health and wellness programming. We bring you up-to-date information about the health of Greene and Columbia counties. We want to provide you with some reliable resources designed to help you live a healthier life. And it's interesting that according to results of a health survey by Siena College in October of 2010, only 2% of residents of both counties turned to the radio to get information about health care. So we here at WGXC plan to turn that around. Join us in supporting our volunteer hands-on radio station so we can continue to bring you valuable information and access to resources through our health and wellness programming. Our pledge drive begins October 24th through the 30th, so be sure you are tuned in and ready to pledge. But of course, we want you to be tuned in before then as well. So today's Wellness Watch, I'm calling it our Back to School edition. Our children are going back to school. They're going to be exposed to various infectious diseases, and of course, that exposure increases from the summertime as they move into those school hallways. And we begin to think about immunizations and prevention against the common cold, the flu, and actually some skin infections. I don't know how many people are familiar with a term called MRSA, the methicillin-resistant Staph aureus. But there's another topic around an infectious disease that you may have heard about in the news just recently, and it's about the HPV vaccine. That's the human papillomavirus. Now, I do want our listeners to know that there may be some explicit conversation around sexually transmitted diseases. So if you are sensitive to that, you may not want to continue listening today. However, it's a very serious infection. Leads to many different conditions and diseases, and one of them being cervical cancer. So today I have a guest. I have Nancy Rosenzweig, and she's just moved to our community, and I want to welcome Nancy.
Thank you, Linda.
And Nancy also is a certified midwife and will be working in out of Dutchess County. Is that correct?
Yes.
Great. Wonderful. So we're going to talk a little bit about the infection, but I do want Nancy to introduce herself and give us a little bit of background and how she got to become a midwife, possibly. Always nice to get to know our new community members. Welcome, Nancy.
Thanks, Linda. For most of my life, I was a professional dancer, started ballet classes at the age of 5, and danced my way through school and college and graduate school, eventually ending up in New York City as a professional modern dancer. I taught, I toured, I traveled the world in modern dance companies, and along the way became very interested in many of the alternative health availability in terms of acupuncture and massage and shiatsu and Feldenkrais and Rolfing and craniosacral therapy and everything under the sun, mostly because at that time we